Welcome to another edition of Slice Your Age in Half. I am Dr. David Matto, and this is the show where we help you live better, thinner, stronger, and happier. How are you doing there? It's great to be back. I wanted to get this this podcast recorded before I leave for the Grand Canyon. I'm leaving tomorrow morning, doing a 4-day backpack trip with some beginners, kind of helping them through, teaching them how to do it. It's going to be a blast. I'm going to have a great time. But yeah, so I wanted to kind of record this and make sure you got a new podcast that you can listen to while I'm in Grand Canyon. I didn't want to have to make you wait too much longer. So I'll be there. I'll be there for about a week or so, 4 days actually backpacking, then I'll be back. And hopefully it should be pretty good. So I wanted just to tell you something kind of funny. You know, I got back from doing, I did the Twin Cities Marathon 2 weeks ago. And I've had so many people come up to me and say to me, "Hey, Dave, what was your time? How'd you do? What was your time?" And a guy said it to me the other day. I happened to be at I was traveling and doing some doing a conference, and a guy there said it to me, and I kind of started laughing in his face, and he was kind of taken aback by that. He said, he looked at me like, why are you laughing at me when I asked you what your time was? And I think I said to him, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I think you must not have read my blog. You must not have heard my podcast. I have a very strict policy. I never tell my time. I never give anybody my time after running a marathon. Actually, these days, I don't give my time to anybody when I run any kind of race. It's just my personal business. It's not anybody's business what my time was." And as I said in my blog, it's pretty funny. If you give somebody your time, if they ask you how you did in the marathon, if I said 7 hours, they would look at me and said, "I've got a great grandmother that can do better than that." And they're like, "Okay, I did 6 hours." And they say something like, "I got my grandmother could do better than that." You say 5 hours, they say, I don't know, "I've got a neighbor that does 4:30. I said, "Okay, I did four hours. They'll come up. And this actually happened to me one time. I think I told somebody my time, and he said, "Back when I ran a marathon 20 years ago, I beat that one. I did like 4:05. So they'll always, somebody will always try to top you. Then if you do 3 hours, my next door neighbor, oh, he's much better than that. And if you just make something up and you say, "Okay, I ran my last marathon in 2 hours and 1 minute. I beat all the Kenyans. I set a world record." They'll look at you and say, "Oh, that's really great. But did I tell you my daughter's going to be going on America's Got Talent?" So it doesn't pay to tell my time. I just don't do it. And not only that, I've explained so many times, I'm not running for time. This is a long-term lifestyle for me, and I'm running because I can run, and I hope to be running 20, 30, 40 years from now still, because I'm not the fastest one in the crowd, not the fastest one in the race, and I'm not getting injured, I'm not getting burnt out, and I just keep it going year after year after year. So I'd love to answer your questions here on my podcast. That's what I do during the show. And if you need to get a question to me, the best ways to do it, well, there's several ways to do it, but one of the best ways to do it is on Facebook. Just find me on facebook.com/David Matto, all one word, David Matto. Or you can send me a Gmail. I love Gmail. Send me a Gmail at rundrdave@gmail.com. RunDrDave is actually spelled RUNDRDAVE. RunDrDave@gmail.com. I love getting your questions because, again, that's what the show is all about. I'm here to help you. I'm here to help you live the best lifestyle you possibly can, whether it's you just want to get a little stronger, you want to feel better about yourself, you want to be thinner, happier. That's what I'm here for. I'm here to help you. I'm here to help you do it. Why don't we take a question then? Why don't we just go ahead and go right into questions? Let me see what I have here. This one actually is from Ryan. Ryan looks like he's from Portland. The only thing is Ryan didn't tell me what Portland he's from. I don't know if you're from Portland, Maine or Portland, Oregon, or maybe there could be a Portland in between. So I'm Ryan from Portland. Ryan's question is, what about stretching? That's a pretty short and to the point question. What about stretching, Ryan? Well, Ryan, you didn't really ask anything specific about stretching, but you did say, I guess why saying what about stretching, is it important? Stretching is very, in my opinion, stretching is very, very important. Your muscles get tight. Your muscles tighten up. Actually, even if you're not doing anything at all, even if you're sleeping, your muscles tighten up. And you've got to stretch them, or else if you don't, what it's going to do, what they're going to do. They're going to be pulling on parts of your body that really shouldn't be pulled on so tightly, which can cause problems. And the most frequent problem, I think, from, again, my opinion, just from what I've seen, from tight muscles, are tight hamstrings in particular, are lower back problems. It's so amazing. The number of people that have lower back problems, I should say quote unquote lower back problems, that when it comes down to it, if they would stretch their hamstrings out, they would go away. Now, I'm not saying that every single lower back problem would go away if you stretch your hamstrings. No. But what I'm saying is a pretty good percentage of people that have lower back problems, chronic lower back pain, it comes from tight hamstrings. So, Ryan, good question. Thanks for getting me into this little talk about stretching. I'm sorry. I had to take a little sip of I'm drinking some white tea as I'm speaking here to you guys and gals. By the way, I'll take a brief diversion from the stretching thing. I've been a tea drinker for a long time. I've really switched from a lot of green and white tea to chamomile tea, and I've actually noticed a lot. I think chamomile is actually really, really healthy. It just comes from the chamomile flower. Green tea and white tea are supposedly two of the healthiest teas out there. They've got a lot of antioxidants, among other great things. But for some reason, and I told you, I believe it was last podcast, I told you a little bit about some of the food issues I had, some of the things I changed in my diet, and which really affected some really great changes. One thing I'm thinking of is with my psoriasis, I actually notice when I drink chamomile tea as opposed to green or white tea, my skin is actually a little bit better. So that's one of the reasons I switched. But I'm drinking some tea here tonight. But I get this question very frequently. And Dave, what are some of the drinks that you recommend? Well, I'll tell you, water is the best drink out there. I would drink as much water as you can during the day, and I would drink no soda whatsoever. There's never an excuse to have any type of soda at all in your life. I'd cut soda out cold turkey if you drink soda. And if you're drinking juice in the morning, a very small glass, several ounces of juice. But water is the best drink. Water is the lubricant that the human body needs on a daily basis to lubricate just everything going on in our complex bodies. So drink more water, especially fresh water, spring water. And I think that's it. It's a real diversion. I mean, I think I was talking about stretching, which led me to take a sip of tea, which led me to get into what's the best drink for you out there. So, let's get back to stretching, because Ryan had a great question there. And, stretching is a very difficult thing to teach, because everybody's kind of got their own little techniques. And it would be impossible for me to really explain stretching or describe stretching on a podcast. Just audio only would make it really tough. But I've got a suggestion for Ryan or for anybody else that, thinks they should stretch more. Have you ever tried yoga? I'll tell you, I've been doing yoga now, probably it's been about 3 years. I only really take an official class once a week. Every Monday evening is my yoga class. And actually, I've got a private instructor that just comes over here to my house. It just makes it easier for me. I'm in a very comfortable atmosphere here, and I don't get to have any excuse. I don't get to make any excuse. I don't want to get in the car tonight to drive to yoga. It's too hot. It's too cold. It's raining. It's snowy. It's icy. It's really great when somebody comes to me and I can just keep that commitment every single Monday evening around 5 p.m. Every single Monday at 5, unless I'm traveling. But during the week also, since I've been taking yoga for quite some time, I know a lot of the poses really well, because, you just repeat some of these poses. And so during the week, and also even when I'm traveling, it is just great to get into some of the yoga positions, because I know yoga has been around forever, for thousands of years. And whoever was the genius that invented yoga thousands and thousands of years ago, I'd like to congratulate that person, because that person truly was a genius. I mean, it came up with these poses that you do sitting in certain positions that give you some of the best muscle stretches you could possibly get. Now let me back up for a second, because yoga is not all about stretching. Much of yoga is stretching. When you're in a certain pose, you are generally doing some type of a stretch that's giving your body some type of a good benefit somewhere. But yoga is actually a lot more than stretching. Yoga is about breathing, about being conscious in this world, you know, knowing what's going on around you. It's about meditation. Yoga is just a really beautiful, I guess I'll call it, I don't know whether I should call it an art form, a sport, an exercise. I'm not sure. Some people have called it a religion, which it's certainly not a religion. But I guess let's call it a special physical art form or something. I'm not really sure. But anyway, yeah, getting back to Ryan. Ryan, I would try yoga. And you know, you don't have to have somebody come to your house to give you a private lesson. There's so many yoga classes around these days, and they're very affordable. And I know even at my climbing gym, if you're a member of a climbing gym or even some other gyms, they will give you a free yoga class in the evening sometimes. I know at my climbing gym, I believe they have yoga every Tuesday night, which I really don't take advantage of there. But I know they have it every Tuesday night there. So yeah, yoga is just, it's a great thing. And the more you do it, the more comfortable you get with it, and the more you see changes in your body. You will not see changes in the first week or weeks or months. I think it really takes a long time to connect with yoga the right way. And by the way, I am not one that, you'll never find me on the cover of a yoga magazine. If you could like rate somebody in doing yoga, I'd be at the bottom. I'd be like the bottom of the class. But the beautiful thing about yoga is it's not a competitive sport. It's not a competitive exercise. You do what you can do with what you're given, what you're dealt with your body. For example, I can't get into these like deep weird poses and stretches. So they're always modifications. So yeah, I've been doing it a few years now, but again, I'm not. If you looked at me, you would say this guy just really does not have a very flexible body, and you're right. But yoga still, for me, gives great benefits, because it doesn't matter how flexible you are, you take it to your limit and not to anybody else's. So if you heard my last podcast, you probably remember hearing Terry coming into the studio to do what we call the Scream. The Scream is a new segment of the podcast, and what I'd like to do is get anybody, any of my listeners that are out there that have some kind of a great accomplishment, something you've done, you've broken through with your lifestyle, with your exercise. Maybe you ran a first marathon. Maybe you lost a lot of weight. Maybe you came back from being injured for years, and now you're doing something really cool. We'd love to hear the story. We'd love to not only hear the story, but I'd love to have you come on the show. And after you tell your story, you kind of give a scream. And a scream could be anything. Last week, I know Terry just pretty much screamed after telling the audience how much weight she lost. She just screamed, "I lost." It was a lot of pounds. I sliced my age in half. Or something like that. So she just kind of screamed like that. But you can scream anything you want. The idea is to come on and do the scream with me and my listeners. And you'll get out there to tons of like-minded people actually all over the world hearing your story. So our next question is from Erica. And Erica is from Pennsylvania. Erica asks, or she says, "My foot's all messed up from falling in February. I quit smoking so I could exercise. Then I messed up my foot. Got nerve damage. They put me on steroids. I gained a ton of weight from it. And I still can't exercise. So now I'm back to smoking. I mean, are there actual exercises and methods you can use to lose weight without moving your feet or with an orthotic boot on? I've been dieting since I was 14 years old. Sad, sad. Seriously, I need to lose weight. I'm desperate, for crying out loud." Okay, well, Erica, really, really good question. First of all, I'm sorry about your foot. Hope it's doing okay. Number one, I would do whatever possible to stop smoking. I don't have to tell you this. It's a poison you're just bringing into your body every single day, and we're supposed to be helping you slice your age in half. Well, I hate to tell you, the tobacco is going to slice your life in half. It's you got to get rid of that. So that's number one. Number two, Erica, I'm wondering since you rode in, if your foot is any better at all. I'm just thinking, can you walk at all in any way, even if it's slow, even if it's really, really slow? Even if you're on crutches, you do what you can. Look, I mean, there are wheelchair athletes out there, and I'm not suggesting you're in a wheelchair even, but there are wheelchair athletes that are double amputees, and they can, you know, they play basketball, they run marathons in their wheelchair. So Erica, if a double amputee can get out there and work out and exercise, I'm pretty confident you can do it. I think the foot thing is an excuse for you to start smoking again and to get back on the sofa and to gain more weight. You're using that as an excuse. And I don't know if there's something psychological there that you just don't want to exercise in the back of your mind somewhere. So these excuses. Now, again, I'm not trying to downplay your injury at all. Believe me, I'm not. But you know you can do something. Even if it means, I'm telling you, even if it means going up to the local high school and putting some crutches on it and just hobbling around the tennis court for half an hour. I mean, that's something. It's something. But again, just making excuses and starting smoking again and not being active is just not a good enough excuse for me, Erica. So good luck. Go ahead and do it. Paula from Atlanta, Georgia, is asking, what type of running shoes should I get? My feet have been hurting after my runs. Good question, Paula. It's funny because in the old days, I used to just go to a store and buy a pair of shoes and try running shoes. I really didn't know how to select them either. So it was kind of hit or miss. And when I used to buy running shoes, I remember a long time ago, I would get expensive ones because I figured, okay, the more expensive they are, the better. But that's absolutely not true. There's so many different types of running shoes. And so, Paula, what I would do, I would go to a running store, a store that absolutely specializes in running. Normally, in a store like this, the salespeople, the clerks are all runners. And not only do they understand running, but they understand shoes and they know how to I shouldn't use the word examine because they're not doctors, but look at your feet and look at the way you walk and select the exact shoe for you. Now, going to a running center actually that has some of the most modern, sophisticated testing equipment, diagnostic equipment is a real plus. I mean, I'll tell you some of the things they do these days. They actually put you on a machine that somehow through heat sensing, can look at your arch, the way your foot hits the ground, and it then projects it on a screen, and you can see the salesperson select what type of shoe you'd be using based on your arch. And not only that, then they actually can put you on a treadmill and watch you run and watch the way your body moves and the way your feet strike the treadmill, et cetera. And by doing these tests there, they can pretty much very confidently put you in a pair of shoes that's best for you. A couple of years ago, I happened to be visiting my daughter down in Florida, in Jacksonville, Florida. I wandered into a running store there. And the funny thing is, I went into the store and I had been wearing this special shoe, not I shouldn't say special, but running shoe called Brooks Beast. Brooks Beast. Probably for, I don't know, 10 years. Whenever there'd be a new model that would come out, I would just, update my shoes to the later model. Because, you retire shoes after a while after so many miles running. So I would generally get a new pair of shoes every year. So I thought they were the best for me. I mean, I was running in them. I was comfortable. Everything was pretty good. But so I went into this shoe store, this running store, and he said, well, if you got a couple minutes before I give you the Beast, and we've got the Beast here, but let me just check your feet because that Beast might not be the best shoe for you. Bottom line is, after about a half an hour of looking and testing and watching me, he put me in not only a different model of shoe, but a totally different size. So not only was I wearing the model of shoe that was not really the best for me, the Stoller model that was not best for me, but I was in the wrong size as well. So, and I'll tell you something. It makes a tremendous difference. I mean, I thought my Brooks Beast were really good. Now I'm running in Brooks Glycerin, which are actually a lighter shoe, a little bit more tailored to the type of running I do. And I'll tell you, this guy at this running center was right on the money, and with the help of his machines. So yeah, Paula, I hope I gave you enough detail there. The more advanced your running story is, the better fit you're going to get. So a short time ago, I was talking about coming in to do the Scream, and I think I got carried away because I think I described what the Scream was all about, but I didn't really tell you how to go about getting into the studio to do the Scream. So what you do is just get me on Facebook. It's facebook.com/DavidMatto, or send me an email, runDrDave@gmail.com, and runDrDave, as you know, is RUNDRDAVE. Let me know what your story is and why you want to be on the screen, why you want to come into the studio to do the Scream. And if you're living pretty far away, I do make exceptions sometimes, and we can do a Scream over the phone. Although I do prefer to have you live in the studio here. It really makes a tremendous amount of difference. But we'll do it either way. So you got your story, you tell me, and hopefully we get you on to do the Scream. So Lauren in Columbus, Ohio, is asking me on Facebook, why are my hands and feet often cold? Lauren, good question there. I don't know the answer to that. I think you need to see your physician about that. I don't really know, but I do know that having hands and feet that are cold all the time, if it's not just a one-time thing, but all the time, could definitely be a sign. I'm not saying for sure, but could definitely be a sign of some type of underlying health problem. Such it could be some kind of circulatory problem or circulatory disease. But you know, there are a lot of other things that could actually cause that. I mean, carpal tunnel syndrome. I think there's maybe some types of edema, pulmonary edema. Could also do it. I don't know if you're a smoker or not, but smoking definitely affects the circulatory system, and smokers oftentimes do have cold hands and cold feet. But again, there could be so many other things involved. Parasites is that's a long shot, but there are some reasons for that. So I guess, Lauren, if it's something that's been going on for a long time, I would certainly get that checked out. I mean, I am those of you that know me, I'm not the type that runs to the doctor for every little thing. First of all, it's really rare that I have an illness, knock on wood. I mean, maybe a couple times a year I'll get a cold. But even if I had more than a cold, I know this past winter I think I had, it must have been the flu. I mean, I was really, really sick with kind of sweating and everything for maybe maybe 3 days or so. So it had to be the flu. But I'm not the type that runs to an MD for every little thing. And I don't even consider the flu. Well, if you're elderly, yeah, the flu could be a problem. But I don't consider myself elderly yet. And I think just there are people that, they get a little sniffle, they get a little cold, and they leave work and they make a doctor's appointment. I just think we kind of abusing that. It's not that we're abusing the system, but come on, people, that's why we have an immune system. We have an immune system. So if we encounter germs and we get sick, our body takes care of it. Our body fixes it. And in most cases, our immune system takes care of these little colds and flus and crazy things that we have. We don't have to run to the we just don't have to run to the doc all the time. Which brings up another, not a pet peeve of mine, but just something that I maybe feel differently than a lot of people about. I mean, people that just wash their hands all the time because they think that by washing their hands, it's going to keep them well and they're not going to get sick. Here's another thing. You know, we've got a very, very complex body, which I went through dental school and I went through dissecting a cadaver and biology and histology and anatomy and everything like that. But I do not pretend to understand the human body, not even close to 100%. Nobody does. So we were given this complex system, and part of it is designed to take care of germs that come into contact with you. So I really do think that people that are so obsessed over washing their hands every few minutes, or if you touch something, or you can't come in contact with this or that because you're going to get sick. I think if you stay away from too much, your body is not going to be used to taking care of these toxins and pathogens in the air, and your immune system won't be strong. I think, come on, let's come into contact with as many germs as we possibly can. That's kind of tongue in cheek, but don't be afraid to don't feel you have to wash your hands every second of the day to so you don't get sick. I think it's the opposite. I think it's the other way around. So, take it for what it's worth. Just a thought from Dave. So, Lauren, thanks for the question, and definitely get yourself checked out there. Hey, do you all have a morning ritual? You know, by morning ritual, I mean, I think a lot of Americans get up in the morning. You know, their alarm clock goes off very quickly. You know, run to the bathroom, get dressed, grab a cup of coffee, grab a donut, eat it in the car, drink it in the car as you're going to work, and you rush to work. And you know, that's what a lot of people's mornings are like, even though that might be a bit of an exaggeration, maybe not even an exaggeration at all. But it's not; it doesn't sound very relaxing to me. And I've learned over the years that a morning ritual can make you just not only healthier, but just have a much calmer day, I should say, and a much better outlook on life. So I'll tell you a couple things about what I do in the morning. I get up. By the way, I never use an alarm clock. My body gets up automatically every single morning. I go to bed fairly early. I go to bed, early for some people. I go to bed around 9:30 to 10 p.m. And pretty much I'm always up right around 6 a.m. Without an alarm clock at all. And I feel very well rested. Now, because of my schedule, like I pretty much make my own schedule, I do not have to report to any office at 7 in the morning or 8 in the morning. So if I get up at 6 a.m., I've got plenty of time to do what I call my morning ritual. And it consists of getting out of bed. I feed my three cats, kind of hang around and relax. And it's a good time. I get on the computer and I go through my social media sites and just check to see what's going on there and post anything I need to post. I do some writing. Just kind of relax around the house. If it's a day that I, you know, go out for a run or a walk, I do that. But if it's not, I will generally do some stretching, some yoga, a little bit of meditation. Actually, that's kind of all combined. So if you're doing yoga, you're generally doing some stretching in the yoga and also some meditation. But it's just a relaxing part of my day. I'll make breakfast, eat breakfast, and then get on to do whatever I was planning to do for the day. And you know, a morning ritual can be 1 hour, it can be 2 hours. But the point is you have something you do, some type of ritual that will help not only relax you, but kind of set the stage for what kind of day it's going to be for whatever you're doing. So again, I just found that really, really helpful to me to know what I'm doing in the morning as opposed to bounce out of bed and do, you know, kind of half asleep, do what you got to do to get to the office. That's, I think, really unhealthy. So even if it means you getting up a little bit earlier and not being rushed and having some type of morning ritual, I think it would more than pay for itself in the long run in health benefits. No question about it. So those of you that know about me know that I don't only talk about exercise, diet, that type of thing on the show in Slice Your Age in Half because I think it was in the very first podcast I did, I talked a little bit about finances, money, and how if you don't have your financial house in order, so to speak, that creates a lot of stress. And if you're, you know, owing a lot of people money, if things are really, really tight for you, if you're not making enough money to pay your bills, that creates a lot of stress on your body. And I wouldn't be able to look you in the eye and tell you that, yeah, I can help slice your age in half. All you got to do is eat better and get some exercise when there's a lot of other things that possibly could be going on in your life. So, yeah, I do talk about money. It's important. It's part of the whole picture. And so actually, it's funny, Irwin sent me an email a very short time ago telling me that he's got a little bit of a situation because he's trying to slice his age in half and live the best lifestyle he can. But he said he really wants to buy a new car. He admits he doesn't really need it right now, but he saw a car that just came out that he loves and he wants to buy it. What is my opinion on that? Well, I don't really have enough information to give a real specific opinion in your situation, Irwin, because you really didn't give me anything. So I can't really say to you, yeah, buy a new car or don't buy a new car. I know nothing about the car itself or your income or anything. But so I'll give more of a general statement. I'll give my general opinion on buying a car. Now, remember, buying a car is only a very small portion of total financial the financial picture. But I do have some rules about buying cars, though. I think most people that, and again, there are exceptions, but most people that buy cars cannot afford them, and they put them on a 5 year, five year loan, 7 year. They've got them up to 8 or 9 years now, I hear. Horrible. So my rule of thumb is, if you are going to buy a new car, pay cash for it. If you can't afford to pay cash for the car, in my opinion, you cannot afford the car. You should be driving, even if it means you're driving a clunker. You go out and find a car for $1,000, because you know something, you don't buy cars you can't afford. It's as simple as that. Now, look, if you're a millionaire, if you're making tons of money and you got the money to do it, then yeah, you go out and buy a new car. You can afford it. But it's funny, even a lot of millionaires I speak to do not feel the need to be driving around in fancy cars or brand new cars. And a lot of millionaires that I know are driving cars that are 6, 7, 10 years old, because they realize a car is a terrible investment. You go buy a new car, and when you drive it off of the showroom floor, as soon as you cross that line, it's going to depreciate anywhere between 20% to 40% as soon as you drive it over the, you know, out of the showroom. In my opinion, a new car is just a horrible investment. Now, if you're just one of these car buffs that you got to have the latest and greatest all the time, and it's got to be fancy, it's got to be expensive, as long as you can afford it, I don't have a problem with it, if you can afford it. But again, if you're taking out a loan, you generally can't afford it. If you pay cash for it, and the cash you're paying for it is a fairly small percentage of your pile of money, then go for it. But don't, certainly, if you've got $50,000 to your name in the bank, and David Madden says pay cash for a car, and you take $50,000 out, pay cash for the car, and don't have anything left, that is also that's not what I'm talking about. So generally, I would not recommend buying new. You know, you can buy a car that's 1, 2, 3, 4 years old that are in fantastic condition, and the amount you save, you put the difference into what you would have spent. You put the difference into some type of investment or retirement plan. You're gonna be a millionaire. You'll be wealthy. So again, Irwin, I hope that helps you. I can't comment specifically to your question, but I hope that did help you there. So I'm packing for the Grand Canyon. I'm leaving tomorrow, actually. And I was thinking, when I was packing up, packing my backpack and organizing, you know, backpacking is not just a physical experience. It is so much of backpacking is mental. And I think there are a lot of things in backpacking that kind of parallel life. Like, in order to be a good backpacker, you've got to be super organized, because, you know, you're carrying everything you need for, if it's a 2 or 3, 4 day, 1 week or 2 week backpacking trip, you're carrying everything you need on your back. And what that means is you can't pack stuff in there without really thinking about it, without discriminating, because you only can carry what you need. You start putting superfluous things in there, and first of all, you're going to run out of space in your pack, so you're not going to be able to carry what you need, and it's going to be way too heavy for you. So you've got to be really, really organized in thinking, in systems, in packing. I think about that a lot. Backpacking, it just helps you so many ways in life. I think it gets you to appreciate life more than you ever could imagine. Like, just love life to its fullest. I think backpacking really just, it does the trick. And I, I, it's sometimes even hard to explain. I just gave an example about the packing and the organization and the systems, but there's just something else about backpacking that I'd say I would recommend any one of you that has never tried it just to somehow find a beginner's backpacking trip. It's probably just going to be one night out in the wilderness with just your pack, your tent, and the things, whatever you can carry on your back. It would be an experience, I'm telling you something, that you would absolutely love. And if you didn't take it to, if you didn't want to do more, take it to the next level, then at least you have that under your belt, and it's something you'll remember for the rest of your life, without question. So I'm going to say goodbye to you now. I am going to be in the Grand Canyon all next week, and so I won't be able to be in touch through podcast or through email or anything like that. But when I get back from the Grand Canyon, from that backpacking trip, I'm sure I'm going to have some really good stories for everybody. And I will be sure to share them, because whenever I go, I just learn, I think, a little bit more about how to appreciate life. And that's what it's all about. I mean, it's, we're all here for a short amount of time. And, sometimes we just think the most important thing in our lives are working for the man, getting to the office, getting to work, whatever you do. And there's so much more to life, to the big picture. So, and one of the ways I've really learned to learn more about that and learn to appreciate that is from backpacking. If you ever get a chance, I would so recommend giving it a try. I really would. Anyway, this brings to close another edition of Slice Your Age in Half. I've had a great time with every single one of you here today. I just hope the information I'm giving you is good information for you, information that you'd like to hear, information that's going to help you live your best life ever and hopefully slice your age in half. If you have any ideas, any questions, anything you want to hear on the program that you're not hearing right now, again, you know where to get me. Get me on Facebook.com/David Matto or email me, rundrdave@gmail.com, RUNDRDAVE. So again, this brings to close another edition of Slice Your Age in Half. I am Dr. David Matto. See you next time.